I feel that when you're giving a shiur, kind of, and you're doing both teaching the sources from the beginning, it's not fair. It really isn't fair to everybody else, because you can say them in any way that you want. You don't necessarily have a you have an audience that you can kind of mold in your own understanding, as opposed to when you're coming from Chavrusa. So now everyone's pretty much, we're on the same page. We've seen the sources together. You've discussed them with your chavrusas, and now we can start actually having a conversation about what the Torah is telling us, as opposed to just teaching. And it changes the whole dynamic. And so, because you've seen this, because you've thought about it, because you're not coming from me just telling you what it says, but rather from a point of view of let's figure out what they're saying. So I would like everyone to participate as much as possible, and we can argue. You can be as critical as you want to anything that is said, and I very much would appreciate it. And it becomes group learning instead. So start off with a question, and when you're asking what the purpose of mitzvot, the reason why I brought in the first source, or the first sugya, of what are mitzvot eternal, are they not eternal, is because I want to just throw out the first question. Can the purpose of mitzvot change? Can you say that there is, at one point of time, the goal of the mitzvot are as follows, afterwards or another point of time, they're different, that the purpose can change drastically? Is that something that is up for grabs? That's the first question. The purpose of mitzvot in general. The second one, yeah? Ben Adam Chaver, can that change? Why in what way would it change? The Ben Adam Chaver mitzvot? They shouldn't change.
Only human nature changes, and according to Ramban,
it doesn't. Okay, so if human nature changes, for sure with Va'afta Le'echa Kamocha, there are certain things that probably in the past would be something that people would just, it would not like at all, but in certain situations it could be that human or society does change in a way where specific things wouldn't necessarily apply. And that's for sure we've seen, but I'm talking about something even more universal. Can the purpose of mitzvot as a whole change?
The Ramban in
That's one case in point. Not just does a time cause mitzvot, the purpose of mitzvot to change, but also even the place can change the purpose of the mitzvot. And that's where the second section goes into, when you get to the mitzvot of Eretz Yisrael versus the mitzvot in Chutz Laaretz, they have totally different purposes in the Midrash. So again, we can see that depending on what time you live in, or even what place you live in, mitzvot, or the purpose of mitzvot, can change. Now that's an interesting idea. Now the question then is, once we know that they can change, or that they can be different, the third thing that we're going to do tonight is try and figure out, okay, what was the purpose during, let's say, Galut? What's the purpose now in the state of Israel? And what's the purpose la'atid lavo in the time of Mashiach? Okay, I'm not going to come and say that, obviously, mitzvot mitvatzlot. I'm going to come and we're going to see a piece in Rav Kook that fights against such a notion, which, by the way, at the beginning of secular Zionism, they didn't necessarily depend on this Gemara, but it was an idea that was in people's minds, that mitzvot no longer apply. Mitzvot was something that you need in order to create an identity. What makes me Jewish when you're living outside of Israel is my actions in the community that I live in. As opposed to in Israel, where what makes me Jewish is the fact that I say Shavuot Tov after Shabbos, even if I didn't keep it. And I say Shabbat Shalom on Fridays to all my co-workers. That's what makes me Jewish. And the fact that when I go onto the Eged bus in December, it doesn't say have a Merry Christmas. It says Happy Hanukkah. And that's what makes me Jewish. And that's something that's very, very special. A lot of Israelis that move to Chutz Laaretz find that.
Problem.
Now they have a problem.
Real problem.
Okay, and it's something that we see very, very often. Right, and a Jewish identity is something that's important to them. However, they don't know how to express that because they've never. It's in a very, very different way. There's a famous story that one of the head of Shlichut from the Sochnut, is a man from South Africa, forget his name, but he said that he once went on a there was once a group from Shomer HaTzair in Israel together with the Reform movement from America that met in a camp in Israel. And at the after they ate, there was the counselor from the Reform movement and says, okay, everyone, let's say the Birkat. And they all started, Baruch Atah Hashem, okay? And the guys from the Shomer Tzair looked at these people from the Reform movement and they said, do you even understand the words that you're saying? And he said, when he saw this, it was the funniest thing in the world. Everybody that didn't understand the words was singing, and everyone that did understand the words thought that this was the most primitive thing in the world, to be singing this, chanting this song after you ate. And so there was this tension at the start of the state of maybe we do not need mitzvot. Now, that's the reality on the ground. And I wanted, before stepping on the reality, let's take a look at where the sources come from. Okay. So, we started off with the Gemara Masechet Nida. And this Gemara has actual, real halakhic implications. That halakha l'maisa. And this has to do both with kilayim as well as the talit that a person is buried with when they pass away. And the halakha is that you can use kilayim or shatnez, okay, something that would be against the Torah to wear in our lifetime. You're allowed to wear that when you're buried. The other thing is, and this the post can bring up, that also when you are with your tzitzit, do you cut the tzitzit when you're buried so that even though you're wearing a four-corner garment, you can, when you come up from the dead, in the time of Tchiyat HaMetim, there might be a problem. You're wearing something that's usher to wear, and your tzitzit, you're not doing the mitzvah of tzitzit because they aren't kosher tzitzit. Now, is that okay? Is that okay?
What's the problem again?
So what they used to do, okay, so we want to bury somebody in shatnez. So we'll go just with that case. Okay, there is, they use this to discuss whether or not you're supposed to cut the tzitzit off the talit that you bury them in.
Right.
And so what happens is they wake up from the dead and they're wearing a four-corner garment with the tzitzit cut off of them, which is halakhically not allowed, right? Because they're not doing the mitzvah of tzitzit. And so those two things, is that okay? And our Gemara says, yes. It's fine. You are allowed to bury somebody in a garment that is filled with shatnez. Why? What's the reason? As you all learned. What? Because the mitzvot aren't going to be around in Tchiyat HaMetim. They're going to wake up from the dead. And even though when they die, this was not allowed, once they wake up, times change, fasts change, now it's okay to wear shatnez. Now this is a very, very difficult concept. So two questions that come up based upon the next two sources is, if we have an idea that the Torah is eternal, the Torah is netzach, and the Torah is something which is not bound by time, it doesn't go out of style, it doesn't change, so how in the world can we say that in the future, in the time of Mashiach, we won't have the Torah? How can we say such a thing? Any answers that either you saw or you thought of throughout the learning? Mitzvot. Okay, so the commandments at least. Okay, yes. So, okay, great. So, what the Rishonim do for that question is they differentiate between Mashiach and Tchiyat HaMetim. And that's why Atid Lavo is something different. Mashiach is a time where we will have mitzvot, but later on, and there's a famous Gemara where Shmuel says, "Ein ben yimot Mashiach l'olam hazeh, ela shiyabun milchot malchiyot bilvad." The only difference between the times of Mashiach and today's time is sovereignty. But in terms of the miraculous world that's described in the Nevi'im as well as in the Gemaras, that's something which is only about the time of Tchiyat HaMetim. So we kind of split up the redemption into two parts, Mashiach and Tchiyat HaMetim. This is talking about the second part. The full picture is in Tchiyat HaMetim, there will be a time where we will have Korbanot. So that's the answer that the Ritva actually gives exactly that question. I kind of took it out, but yes, that's what he talks about. So what do we do with this Gemara? How do you reconcile the fact that the Torah is eternal, and on the other hand, that eventually the mitzvot will become irrelevant? What do we do with that?
Well, the mitzvot the purpose of the mitzvot is to perfect us. And by the time of Mashiach, we will supposedly have become perfected and maybe outlived their usefulness.
Okay, very good. So that's the Maharal's answer that we saw. So we'll go through the spectrum of answers. The first answer we can say is the most extreme one, which is the Maharal's on one side, which is also Tosfot, that says, really, there will be no mitzvot whatsoever at the time of Mashiach, at the time of Tchiyat HaMetim. There won't be. And the reason is very simple. The mitzvot have a purpose. What's the purpose of the mitzvot? To perfect me. Well, the tzalef et abriyot, to become perfect. Now, if I've done that, done. Right? You pass the test. You don't have to redo it. It's over. It's all done. You pass the chinuch stage. We're now in the Yimot HaMashiach. We're all perfect. It's all wonderful. It's all great. No more mitzvot. On the other side, in the most extreme, we have the Rashba, which can't stand that our Gemara can be saying that the mitzvot will be no longer, and therefore he reinterprets our Gemara in a way which seems to be not at all what it's saying, not at all the most simple understanding of the Gemara is otherwise. And he says that it's simply telling us that when you die, you won't have to do mitzvot. Okay. Now, whenever you see an answer, which in Yiddish you would say is shver, right? Shver, meaning that it seems like he's kind of giving an excuse as opposed to giving an answer. What you understand from that is, for this person, it's a very, very big problem. The Rashba finds this to be a very big problem. To say that there won't be any mitzvot in the future is something that the Rashba cannot tolerate to say. By the way, the Rashba says this regarding one other idea as well. The Rashba, in the Shut HaRashba, everyone knows the famous, not about mitzvot, but everyone knows the famous Gemara that says that in the future we won't have any holidays except for
Purim.
Okay? Purim and Yom Kippur, according to one opinion.
Not Hanukkah?
No. Purim and Yom Kippur. So how can that be? In the future we won't have the holidays? So the Rashba says that can't be. The Torah is eternal. Pesach, Sukkot, they're all in the Torah. It can't be that we'll ever lose them. So he says, what's it talking about? It's talking about a time when people cannot keep the holidays. And what it's saying is, in a time when you can't keep the holidays, then they will be irrelevant to you, except for Yom Kippur and Purim. The power of those days will still have an influence on you, even when you can't keep them. And so what's he talking about? He's talking about not in the future, in the time of Mashiach. He says, even then we'll be doing Pesach, we'll be eating matzah, we'll be doing Shavuos. However, in the time like the Holocaust, Rachmana Litzlan, where you can't keep Yom Kippur, you have to eat, he says, the power of Yom Kippur will still give you kapara. And that's what the Gemara is trying to tell us. So we see that the Rashba continues on this thought, where he says, I cannot say that any mitzvah, any ot in the Torah, cannot be cancelled out. It can't happen. Yes.
Rav Yosef. Well, here he learns. Okay, so Rav Yosef learns this. So he's the one who's saying this. He's the one who's saying there won't be any mitzvah in the future. So the Rashba learns something different.
So the Rashba is explaining Rav Yosef.
So, but why can't the Rashba say he doesn't think people?
Because we pass on that halacha.
Yeah,
the halacha is like Rav Yosef.
Yeah. So, everyone agrees with him.
Well, there is a machlokis between Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish afterwards, but we pass on like Rav Yochanan.
Right.
So, and the Rashba knows that. So what is he going to do? Okay, and so he'd rather change the Gemara than you know stick with this problem. Okay. That's what Gehenom does. It's a hard process, but you know that's what the Gehenom's for. It purifies him, and hopefully when he comes back, he'll be nice and clean. That's a separate issue, but that's the reality. Okay, now we have these two extremes. The two extremes are, number one, we have on one side the Rashba that says that the Torah will never, ever, ever be changed, and it can't change. On the other side, we have the Maharal that says the mitzvot have one purpose, to make us pure. Once we're pure, it's done. The Ritva takes these two ideas and he puts it right in the middle. And he gives a beautiful, beautiful compromise between the two, or synthesis between the two. He says, you know what? In the end of the days, what's going to be gone is not the actions themselves. It's not the Torah that's going to be gone. Rather, what is it? As you saw?
The reasons for it.
No, the opposite.
The obligation
for it. In general, the reason why we keep the Torah today is because we're told to. No of us will go and put on tefillin and keep Shabbos if we were never told to do such a thing. But eventually, at the time of Yitzchias HaMeitim, the world will be in such a state where it will be clear to us that this is what we should be doing. The mitzvot will become a natural part of our lives. And this is something that Rav Kook, in source number 7, builds off of. Rav Kook says that when one's inner intellect, the soul, is able to shine in all its glory, there is no need for specific guidance through laws and precepts. For at this at that point, one's actions are guarded by one inner light. At that point, the Torah's laws will not be performed because of the obligation, but rather because of our natural inclination. Torah will be natural, just like we eat in the morning, we go to the bathroom. These are things that we know we have to do. So too, we'll keep Shabbos, we'll eat kosher. I was teaching this once, this piece of Rav Kook, to a girls' class. And one of the girls asked, "What does that mean? That's ridiculous. How could that be? What do you mean? Why would anyone put on tefillin if they weren't told to put on tefillin? It doesn't make any sense." So, and anyone, what does that mean that it's going to be natural to us?
The reason would be obvious. It would be obvious. It's not obvious now, right? It's a mitzvah like kashrut. It doesn't seem to make sense. It's not rational. Rather than
obligation. I don't think it's not just willingly. It goes further.
It would be obvious.
It would be obvious. What? And when we get to that level, reality will be so clear to us.
Right. Yeah.
You know that you're naked, you feel
weird.
But if you go outside, let's say you haven't combed your hair, or you haven't put on a ring or something like that, or let's say a woman hasn't put on her earrings, faces, and sometimes she feels naked without her earrings.
Right.
I don't feel naked without my earrings, but for her...
I wasn't going to say anything, but, you know.
you feel naked, you don't put on
right. Right. And so that's it's, things are going to change so much. So what I answered her is I asked her, "Do you wash your hands after going to the bathroom?" She looks at me, she's like, "That's the most disgusting thing I've ever heard. Of course I wash my hands." I said, "Well, 200 years ago, would you have washed your hands after going to the bathroom?"
Maybe yes, maybe no.
Probably not.
At least for you today, a lot of people don't wash their hands.
Okay, unfortunately. But why not? Because 200 years ago, nobody knew about germs. Germs, they didn't exist. And what you're saying now is like, you know that there's these invisible things on your hands that can cause infections. Ooh, where are they? Why do you wash your hands? They're not dirty. There's these germs. And so somebody living 200 years ago will tell you you're crazy because you think that there's these invisible things on your hands. But times we became smart enough to understand how the world works, and because we became a little bit smarter, we'll be able to know that we should wash our hands after going to the bathroom. And so now, all of a sudden, Netilas Yadayim makes sense. And so eventually, you'll get to the point where not just we understand the physical world better so we wash our hands, but rather because we understand the spiritual world well enough to know that I shouldn't be eating non-kosher, and to know that I should be wearing tefillin, to know I should be keeping Shabbos. Yeah.
But is Rav Kook saying that we would have no choice other than to do the... like?
We have choice. Do you have choice whether or not to eat breakfast?
Even... yes.
So okay.
Choice whether to wash my hands after I go to the bed.
Exactly. So it will just be natural to.
No, it's just your awareness will be so heightened that you'll
do it anyways.
But there'll be free will not to do it.
Yeah, of course. Just like you have free will not to wash your hands.
But I'm saying, at the end of the day, it's when the Mashiach comes.
You'll have free will. Okay. Yeah. And there's that's a big discussion, but yes, Rav Kook believes you will have free will. It'll just be that what we're choosing is totally different because the world will be so clear to us that okay, yeah, there are some days that I choose not to eat breakfast because I'm busy.
Then I will not have been perfected if I'm choosing not to put on tefillin.
You will, because it will become obvious to you. You'll just sometimes.
And if I don't do it,
then you're going against your nature, which is a totally different thing about today, which you're going against the command.
Then I haven't been perfected.
What do you mean? People miss breakfast all the time. People don't take care of their bodies all the time.
It's a mitzvah to eat breakfast.
Correct. No, but there's no... people go against naturally today. Right? People know that eating fried food makes them unhealthy and sick. Okay? Eventually, if you live in that lifestyle.
Yeah.
Okay? If you're constantly eating fried food, you're eventually going to get into some serious health issues. And you kind of feel like that after eating it. People do it anyways.
Yes.
They have free will. It will just become... So he's saying that our free will will stay the same. It's just that the reality of the world will be so different. He doesn't necessarily take the Maharal completely. Because the Maharal seems to say there's no point to the mitzvot anymore. Okay, so now what we have is one example of how mitzvot can change. Going from a reality of something that is an obligation to a feeling that this is something that I should be doing because it's natural to me, it's the right thing to do. That's the way things will change. Now the next point is that we have an idea that there's a difference between the goal of mitzvot in Chutz La'aretz and the goal of mitzvot in Eretz Yisrael. Based on the sources 8, 9, and 10, the idea is, what's the goal of mitzvot in as anyone saw them, what's the goal of mitzvot in Chutz La'aretz?
Practice.
Practice. So I don't know if it's practice. It doesn't say practice. I mean, I would have said practice probably about 5 or 6 years ago when I was teaching at a kotel, but at this point. So you shouldn't forget. So I would call that, instead of practice, I would call that identity. Identity.
There is an idea that it's practice.
That is, when people quote this as the practice, right? But I'm just using a different word, because in English, generally practice as that is meaningless. It doesn't mean it's just practice. Even though we know that practice is very, very important, right? Everyone who plays basketball or, you know, is a part of any team knows that practice is very important. I would call it identity, though. Okay? No? What?
Allen Iverson.
Allen Iverson. He doesn't practice? Or he did
practice.
Practice.
Practice. Okay. That's what I was thinking about, too.
Look it up on YouTube.
Talking about practice. Yeah.
One thing I want to say is that, when you're giving for example, Toronto.
Yeah.
It's strong identity. You can walk into a place here, you get this about anything. Culture, this. What you don't like it. This flavor, that flavor, whatever. If you live in a small Jewish community, it's become, you become very strong because you have to make an effort to identify. It's not just taken for granted.
Right.
It's like if you want to have kosher meat,
you have to work for it.
You have to make certain. If you want to keep Pesach, you're making the order already in January, February to keep have a kosher Pesach.
Right, so it's the further you are away from that community and that world, you have to work harder to make this identity, and these mitzvot create that identity. Okay, so that's what but there's definitely a difference. Now, I like the way Rav Kook says it the best. Okay, he writes as follows. He writes Divrei Ramban, and it's loosely translated. All of Rav Kook's writings in this source sheet, I loosely translated, and I did that on purpose because the translation is equally as hard as the English to understand. And so, if I made it's not correct. The translations are wrong. Just throw that out there. But at least they give the idea of what I believe he's saying. And you kind of, it'll help you understand the Hebrew.
There's a major mistake here, because the Hebrew says the Ramban.
Oh, it says Ramban. Oh, I forgot the Ram. Okay, they're too close to each other. That is a big difference.
You really meant the Ramban.
Yeah, he did. Okay. I'm sure I can make a whole drusha out of that mistake.
A student would pick that up.
Right.
Yeah, no, because when I was reading English,
someone will make a drusha.
Right.
No, because when I was reading English, the Rambam doesn't count living in Eretz Yisrael.
Right.
Well, so it just didn't seem to make sense that he would ascribe so much importance to.
No, that's already a discussion. Oh, right, that depends. There is Rav Kook on the Rambam. Right, so the reason why it doesn't count in the mitzvah is because it's so encompassing. As well as the Tzitz Eliezer says the same thing. But in any case, okay, so he does actually ascribe this idea to the Rambam as well, but in this case he is talking about the Ramban. Right? Okay, so the Ramban says in his commentary on the Torah, explained that we only accomplish the main reason why we keep all the mitzvot in terms of their inner purpose in the land of Israel. So that's what he writes. What don't we accomplish in Chutz La'aretz? He's saying, everyone always reads these midrashim and says that in Eretz Yisrael, it's only in order to kind of create identity or for practice or whatever you want to say. So they come and they say, what? Rashi didn't get as much schar as Shmuel living in Kiryat Gat. Like, come on. Rashi was a gadol b'Yisrael. What? Rav Moshe Feinstein didn't get as much schar. I don't get it. What does that mean that they didn't do mitzvot? They only did practice. These people went up to the Shemayim. So what Rav Kook is explaining is this has nothing to do with schar. This has nothing to do with the impression that the mitzvot have on you. Okay, the mitzvot, when you do them in Chutz La'aretz, they have an incredible impression on you, and they make you into a better person, and they make you closer to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. They do all those things. However, what's missing is their ultimate purpose. There's an ultimate purpose for mitzvot that exists. Yes, mitzvot are there also to identify me as a Jew. They're there to put me into the community of a Jew. They're there to make me into a better person. But they're also, eventually, altogether trying to reach some sort of grand purpose. And that grand purpose is only reached in Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Kook explains why that is in source number 11. This is a source that I'm sure, at least if you've been to any of my shirim, I've probably quoted this in probably 400 different shirim. Rav Kook in Malachi Yideyot, he comes and he gives what the goal of Am Yisrael is. And he says the goal of Am Yisrael as a nation, as opposed to as individuals, is to prove that you don't have to be an individual in order to reach God. You don't have to separate yourself out from the world and kind of live as a nazir on top of a mountain in order to be spiritual. Spirituality is something that connects to everything within the world. It connects to economy, it connects to military, it connects to culture, it connects to art, it connects to politics, it connects to the shuk, and it connects to the guy who cleans the streets. And what Judaism does is it says, what Yadut, the goal of Torah is to show that all of these aspects of life can be filled and infused and also express the ideas of the Torah. And if we don't have an economy based on Torah, not only are we not doing the economy correctly, we're also not doing Torah correctly. Torah needs to be expressed through the economy. And this is why we need a country. We have to prove that God is able to connect and able to live within all aspects of life. And that's something which is integral to the goals of what the Torah is about. And that's what it says if you read through Dvarim, the goal of the Torah, why we keep the Torah is, Shiru kolam el kolamim, all the nations will see us and say, this is a nation that God is close to them. And not because they saw that we're sitting and learning all day necessarily, but rather because it expresses itself in everyday life. And our nation is something they see, Hashem Karov Elav. It's not that we've changed ourselves in a way that we are now living on top of a mountain and now, oh wow, they're so spiritual, he doesn't eat food. But rather, it's, that's incredible. Life is godly. And that's where, that's the goal, the ultimate goal of the mitzvot. And that's something we're only able to do in Eretz Yisrael. We're able to have the best high tech run by Yeshiva Bachram. I have a close friend that he has a very, very, very successful startup company. And he's a CEO. Two of my friends who were in yeshiva for 8-9 years, and then they opened up a successful startup, and they're constantly in discussions with Samsung and Apple and LG and all these different companies in order to buy their patents. But he learns night seder every night in yeshiva and teaches. It's just like that's not tofes. What do you mean? And when you're sitting you come back from your trip to Korea when you were talking with the high ups in Samsung, and then all of a sudden you come back and you're teaching a Rashba and in Baba Metzia to a group of Shana Aleph guys. It's an amazing idea. And it's not that it's separate in their life, but rather the reason why they believe that they should be developing the land of Israel and developing the country and developing the Mendina is because my goal is to show that this is an expression of Torah. We're supposed to be a light to the world, and this is part of what that means. And that's what's this is an incredible part of what our Torah is about. And that's what Rav Kook means when he says that in Chutz La'aretz, you're doing mitzvot and they're wonderful and they're great, but they don't reach their ultimate purpose. The ultimate purpose is to create a symbol of godliness in all aspects of life in the world. That's what the mitzvot are there for.
But in theory you can. I mean, in other words, you can live in Uganda and have the same society. It's based on Torah. You can't do mitzvot to go to.
Yes, but there is an extra... Okay, so that gets into another sugya of why we need a specific place as opposed to any place. Just like we can ask, yes, you need a specific day, Shabbos, in order to contemplate God, but it can be any day.
Like we have mitzvot, or we have a whole set of rules on how that person to deal with going.
Correct.
So if you're just living in a...
But those are all derabanan. They're derabanan. Name one deraita.
Whatever. I mean, like the
Toshet. You have to notesh the vodazara. That's the deraisa.
Okay, but I'm saying the Torah doesn't tell us that you have to live only in a homogeneous society of Jews.
Right. Okay. That's fine.
Economy and culture and art and politics, all those wonderful things you can do the derech haTorah even in a society that's not in Israel.
As a nation. What do you mean? How can I create right now in Canada Torah politics? Should I take over the government? What should I do?
No, listen. I think that there's. You can, first of all, it doesn't necessarily have to be in Canada.
No, where can it be?
We spoke about Uganda.
Right. All right. So if we're going to all move, all of Am Yisrael is going to move to one area and create an Israel in a different land. Okay. So what my answer to that is simply en achinami. It could be. However, just like we don't keep Shabbat on Tuesday, we don't do Israel in Uganda.
It's not a good example.
It's exactly the same. And on purpose, I'm saying because. Logically, if you would explain what the goal of Shabbos is, does it make sense? Could we do it on Tuesday? If all of Am Yisrael decides we're going to do it on Tuesday, would it make sense? Would Shabbos have the same effect on us?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right, it would. But why don't we? So we also believe in an idea called intrinsic Kedusha. Okay, we'll get into that afterwards. But in terms of the goal of it, it's still the same goal.
If we were to discover that we've been keeping Shabbat on the wrong day all along...
That'd be amazing.
No. Would we go and then change it to the right day? Rav Soloveitchik would say no. I think.
Why would Rav Soloveitchik
say no? Because
you don't mess with tradition.
Yeah, no. Far be it from me to quibble with the Rav that said, but no. Just because we've now discovered that we were doing something wrong doesn't mean that we should necessarily fix it.
Oh, because of tradition. Okay. I think it would be a big debate and be really interesting.
I don't think it would be a debate. I think we should move it.
You think you would just move it?
It's a fair Gemara.
What, of being in when you're in the Midbar?
Yeah.
All right. So that's as an individual. I mean, if all of Am Yisrael...
Fine, yeah. It's a Gemara.
What, that if all of Am Yisrael was doing the wrong day?
That's impossible.
Ah, basically, all right.
Sanhedrin said.
Okay. And then they would just change it.
You're wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's still, meaning Shabbos was still had an effect. Meaning retroactively, was Shabbos meaningless? No. So that's a different question. Whether or not we change Allah, but.
Okay.
So, all right. So, but the next question is, this sounds really great. It's beautiful. It's a wonderful idea that the goal of Torah is to create this beautiful nation that represents God in the world, and big ideas, and amazing, and that also what we spoke about before, how in the Achareiyat HaYamim, religion and Torah will become natural to us, and it'll be the way that we express our humanistic,
humanity.
Okay, humanity, that's the word, okay, my humanity will be through the mitzvah, which is an amazing idea, but it's not like that. What happened? What went wrong? What's going on? So Rav Kook in Mamah HaDor, he kind of gives a synopsis of what went wrong. Okay, together with the next few sources we're going to see is what went wrong and how we can fix it. Why is it that we're not in that state right now, and when can we fix it and how can we fix it? And this gets into today's modern state. So in a sefer called Mamah HaDor, he explains as follows. Did anyone get to Mamah HaDor? This one? Source number 12?
No, didn't even get to
11. Okay, wow. All right. So, at source number 12, Rav Kook brings an idea that the reason why the Jews living in Europe or across the world in the 1800s started rejecting Judaism was because they didn't experience what we have been talking about. Two reasons. Both the fact that Judaism became unnatural, it just seemed something that didn't fit with who they were, and in a certain sense, Torah should be a natural expression of my humanity. It should be something that is who I am. And the second thing is, they weren't talking about big ideas. It was all small ideas, it was all tiny little, okay, nuances and halacha, and they wanted something bigger. And he writes that Dor Baruach Gadol, a generation that has a great spirit, will always desire to hear and be part of big ideas. They want it to be part of something bigger, not just the small halachot. And the biggest problem was they weren't able to see how the everyday mitzvot, how does this make me into a better person? Very, very often teaching in a high school, I get that question. You're sitting and you're learning the intricacies of the machlokas between the Ritva and the Rashba and Masechet Gedushin, and then all of a sudden it turns to you and says, I'm not a better person after this class, why in the world should I be sitting here? And is that a bad thing that they feel that way? So very often we reject them and we say, no, you have to learn the Rashba and the Ritva, it's important. They look at you and say, it doesn't feel important, it doesn't sound important, So kol hakavod to you that you're telling me it's important, that's irrelevant. And so Rav Kook says that was the problem with the generation. They were too genuine, they were too real. They wanted something more. And they weren't finding it with us. And so what Rav Kook's answer to that was, we got to start giving it to them. We got to start showing how these are really big ideas. We got to start focusing on the big ideas within Judaism, because otherwise we're going to lose everyone. And so we have to turn it to try and figure out how these specifics are really part of the big picture. Okay, now we know what the problem with today's generation is.
That's why for Sadat, for instance, he says, why don't you know? I've been so successful because this is what he learned from Rav Kook.
Yeah.
So if you tell a kid that he's 18 years old that you can be part of something great and you have a responsibility, then yeah.
It's the Shemaim is the limit. And so, but this is amazing, right? We want big ideas. Latid Lavol, big ideas. Am Yisrael, our goal, they're all big ideas. So, what happened to us? Why did we go through a very, very long period in history where our focus was specifics and small ideas and the intricacies of halacha? Why did that happen?
Because we weren't in a position to put them into effect.
Okay. Why were we not in that position? What happened? What? But why? What happened? And so, historically, what we understand is this: there was a thesis, an antithesis, and eventually we'll reach a synthesis. We get to the source number 13. He writes as follows: we will never forget the golden age of Shlomo HaMelech, the building of the first temple, and the height of both spiritual and material life that was reached. The moon stood in its perfection. That was the height of Jewish history. It was a quantitatively small area, but quantitatively grand. How did such a significant time come to an end so quickly? We talk about Shlomo HaMelech, and how long was Shlomo HaMelech this pinnacle of Jewish life, of Bayit Rishon, of we reached the goals of what Judaism is all about and created a country and a nation based upon God, Kisei Hashem was in this world. What happened? Why did it end? So he says like this. How did such a magnificent time come to an end so quickly? The problem was that this greatness was reached only on a national level. Individuals have no way of translating this into their everyday life, and so, as they're not yet reached that lofty level. It was amazing that the country represented God. But what did that mean when I went home and, you know, hung out with my family? Nothing. It was meaningless. And our individual lives were so different than our national life. We had these grand ideas, but on the other hand, we were missing completely the specifics, the everyday life. How to translate that into my everyday. And because individuals were not able to grasp the divine ideal in Perikei, that were achieved at the time of Shlomo HaMelech, nor were they able to translate them into their everyday lives, that reality needed to be broken. It was destroyed. It just couldn't last that way. When you have an ideal, but people aren't actually living it, it's not internalized on an individual level, it broke down eventually. And this, the second Beit HaMikdash came. And what was the goal of the second Beit HaMikdash? It was to be the antithesis of the first Beit HaMikdash. It's to be a time where we focus completely on specifics, derabbanans. Chumrah after Chumrah. Ideas that in the time of first Beit HaMikdash you would never see such a thing, but that's what we focus on now. How can your life be on its own individually connected to Hashem? How can you make yourself into the best person? The idea of self-improvement didn't exist in Bayit Rishon because it was irrelevant. We were trying to build the Beit HaMikdash. We're trying to bring Malchut Hashem. What does that mean? How do I become a better person? What difference does it make? How do I become a better person? By being part of the national ambition. Now we say, no. Everything fell apart. Bayit Sheni. Bayit Sheni is about individualism. And that created this time, and it became more and more about the individual as Galut came on. And then, now, we come and find a synthesis. Where there's a need to come back to the big ideas. However, and that's the end in source number 14, when all those ideals come together and find their resting place in a clear manner, then it will be clear how all of the guidelines and precepts of the Torah, all the specifications and qualifications shine bright. Even if they don't directly connect to what would seem to be natural human morality, universal ideal, we'll see that they add to the beautiful tapestry that we weave. Even in the past, it would seem that tefillin was not something that made me into a better person. It didn't make sense how we part of the big ideas. The fact that we're spending through Bayit Sheni all throughout our time in the past 2,000 years clarifying these ideas, hopefully we'll come to the point where we're able to explain to the new generation why tefillin is so important. Why tefillin is part of the big idea. That's the goal of the reason why we're in Galut. So we would say, what is the purpose of the mitzvot at the time of the modern state of Israel is to create this synthesis. Is to work as hard as we can to be able to explain how these things affect us on an individual level, but also how they can, how our we ourselves, as well as our children, can become part of something bigger. How this way of life is not just contained within its Arba Amot. How it's something which can be part of something big. And that's the goal of mitzvah in the modern state of Israel. Not to step away from these mitzvot, but to show how they're a natural expression. And that's the atid lavo, that the mitzvot, the tzivui mevatlot, because they become so ingrained in us as a natural expression of being something, part of something so grand and so magnificent, that I'm going to want to do them on my own. Eventually we'll reach that. Now, what's important is we can't run away too far and to say, okay, so I'll only do things when I feel that it's right, because that's at the end of the day the goal. The cook brings a Gemara, and we'll just read the top, the first line of the Gemara in Sarabas number 15. Says that Tefillin Hem Yuchad. It says Tana Rabbi Yitzchak Yotze Adam B'Tefillin Erev Shabbat Im Chashecha. You got to make sure to wear your tefillin all the way till night on Erev Shabbos. On Shabbos, you don't need tefillin because everything around you is naturally, you can be affected by the spirituality in the air. However, you got to be very, very careful to keep your tefillin on tight. Up until that point, to not release ourselves from being committed to the halacha that's kept us strong for so long, just because we're trying to reach this grand idea, and therefore we have to, on one hand, he says it's a metaphor. It's a metaphor for keeping your mitzvot and your external actions strong as we get closer and closer to the time of Shabbat, which a mitzvot mevatzlot lati lavo, which is the Shabbat Hagadol, and that is. The way I view what we have to be doing. Number one is, we have to keep committed. However, we should try our hardest to explain and to live the Torah in a bigger way, in a bigger fashion, to show how all these different ideas are really part of something which has a very, very grand and magnificent tachlit. Any questions? Yes. Yes.
If you're going to discuss identity,